San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast to Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB or tune in radio, you can hear the show as it airs. And all these podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. Now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, accomplished marathon runner, best-selling author, lecturer, philanthropist, and family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm busy, Joe. I'm packing my suitcase heading to Durango, Colorado for the holiday.
Yeah. It's going to be quite a great week.
Going to goof off for the 4th of July. So I hope everybody has a safe one. Don't be shooting off firecrackers illegally.
Couple cool things I'd like to talk about. Last Sunday, I saw the closing performance in the cultural mecca of San Diego, Ocean Beach. The OB Playhouse, believe it or not, they had a production of I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. It started in the mid-90s and off-Broadway. It's been produced in many, many theaters and towns across the country. I want to tell you, it's two guys, two gals, a piano and violin, and I want to tell you, they were phenomenal. And it's a cute little, I don't know how cute it is, but it's an intimate theater seat. So I don't know, I'd say 125
It's a small
people.
Play.
And Avenue Q is coming up next, and I'm going to go see that too. So.
Okay.
By the way, soccer is coming to San Diego. Did you follow any of this, Richard? The NASL, not the...
I do not follow soccer.
Yeah.
It's out of...
I don't either, but some people do in the world, and it is a popular sport globally. We know that.
Yeah, it's coming to San Diego.
Yeah.
And, they said in 2018?
Well, I think they're starting in your stadium. I think you can start a USD Torero Stadium.
I think they are.
This
a nice stadium,
this
by
year.
The way.
And they're going to fund it all themselves, which I think is the way to go.
Okay.
And I'm still a little miffed about the mayor meeting privately with one developer about the Qualcomm site. And I think there'll be more to come on that. But I think a lot of people are irritated, not only the San Diego State community, which seemed to get thrown under the bus.
Well, San Diego State got thrown under the bus.
Yeah,
right.
Right. And so they're irritated. There's a lot of people. Now I think it's come out that he may have been meeting with the Soccer City people before the Chargers were even completely out the door, and I apparently did not lift a finger or wasn't that excited about keeping the Chargers here either. And I think between those communities, the disaffected Chargers fans or the irritated Chargers fans or the ex-Chargers fans, between those two groups, I think we ought to explore having him take an early leave.
it's a San Diego tradition for mayors taking an early leave.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So no different here, but I think a lot of people are irritated about that. Anyway, we've got a very important guest. He's got a legendary in the field of political activism. He's been a state legislator and a lawyer, and he's known in these parts as Ira Leshner. Ira, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Boy, you got a fascinating history, Ira. And what year did you get to San Diego?
I came to San Diego about 22 years ago because my wife had died of ovarian cancer back east. I lived in Virginia most of my adult life, having grown up in the Lower East Side of New York, and then in Maryland. And after my wife died, I sort of circulated through the country in the Church of Baseball, going to every minor league baseball stadium between San Diego and Washington, D.C. And then met a wonderful woman here, Eileen Haig, who was the publisher and editor of the Bernardo News. We got married and still married, and I'm not at all unhappy to be here except when it's too hot. And I'm happy to be here in the winter instead of in Washington, or in the summer instead of in Washington. But I'm back in Washington 1 week a month.
Gotcha.
About how many minor league stadiums did you visit?
I think about 35. I have a friend who I think has been now to 130 some odd major and minor league stadiums in the country.
Oh, my gosh. That's
and he has a routine that's unbelievable. As soon as he goes to the stadium, he buys a program.
Right.
He sticks it in a plastic sleeve.
Okay.
He takes his ticket. He sticks it in a plastic sleeve. And he won't leave until the game has been officially called by the umpires.
Oh,
and we were in Rochester, New York, as I recall, when a hurricane came through. We were the only people sitting in the stands. He refused to move because the umpires hadn't called the game.
Just a rain delay while the hurricane blew.
He's a retired eccentric millionaire, this guy? What is
right. And the players were sliding on the on the tarp and all that sort of stuff, throwing water balls at each other and all that sort of stuff. Wouldn't leave.
Did you guys have plastic bags or anything over your heads? Or anything?
It was amazing. I had to go up to the radio booth and say, would you please call the damn game.
Hmm. Like Ray Kroc.
why the fascination with minor league baseball?
Well, actually, I think you really see baseball in a more realistic sense.
Well, for one thing, you get to sit really close to the action.
You really do. And then if you, as I used to be a Padre fan, can't say I am now, that when I went to watch the minor league teams in the Padre system, then you would sort of adopt the player. You would see the growth of that player, et cetera. And inevitably, of course, if he was any good, see him, like Rizzo, traded away.
Yeah.
And Jed Jerko traded away and Trey Turner traded away, all starring for other teams in the National
League.
Well,
the road to the World Series.
Go Padres.
The world to the World Series is through the Padres. We know this. It's the same thing with the Chargers, you know. We had, was it Chuck Knoll? He has four Super Bowl rings. He worked for the Chargers and Bill Walsh. But anyway, I was going to say it's a much more intimate experience when you go to a minor league game, obviously. And then we have up here the Elsinore, Lake Elsinore. What's that team?
The Storm.
Have you been to that stadium?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Really?
Lovely. Some minor league stadiums are spectacular. And then others are in the Yankee farm team system. I remember there's one where the players change in the men's room of the stadium.
Do they have more than one minor league team, the Yankees? Or?
Yeah, they got about six or seven.
I think they have quite a few, yeah. It's on a short league, they call it.
Well, it's a rough way to make a pro team in baseball. The odds are so long, right? I mean, what do you tell a kid? I mean, geez.
Exactly.
I mean, do we have a number of how many minor league players are out there?
There's double A, triple A. Your odds of making the majors are less than 10%. And then, of course, the odds of coming out of high school or college and even playing in the minors is less than 10%.
Right.
So you're talking about the 1%.
Tell me why the Padres would pick a minor league pitcher who from North Carolina who played against what kind of competition in probably, 15 games that he possibly pitched in high school as their number one pick?
Do you want to know why?
Give me a break.
I'll tell you why. Want to know why?
Money?
Why? He's cheap.
Money, affordable.
Right.
Look at Matt Bush, who's now actually a really good relief pitcher with the Texas Rangers 12 years ago. Of course, he had his issues with alcohol addiction and actually in prison.
But he's local kid, though, right?
We passed on Jared Weaver, who, of course, we picked up this season, and I could have hit a home run off of this guy. He's having such a bad year.
Well,
we passed on Justin Verlander. Why? Because we wouldn't have been able to sign them.
Well, how about the guy from Japan who can hit home runs and pitches like 104 miles an hour? You see this guy? Have you read about
him? Yeah, I know about him.
He's 22 years old. This guy's phenomenal. He hits balls.
Don't get me going on the podcast. Yeah. Just don't get me going. Because
anyway, we don't want to spend too much time on baseball because we have Ira here, but we do want to get into, born and raised New York, Ira? Or?
Lower East Side of New York, 4th Street and 2nd Avenue.
And then how'd you wind up in the South? Did you go to school there? Or?
Well, I the United States Army sort of sent me there the Korean War, and I was a lawyer at that point, having been drafted. Having tried to get out of the draft for a hell of a long time, but then finally they got me.
Gotcha.
And that was after I had gone through law school. And
is this World War II or what? Korea.
Gotcha. And then went in the Pentagon as a JAG, Sergeant Louis.
Well, let's pause it right there, because we'll get more into your background, professional education, all that with Ira Leshner right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with Ira Leshner, political activist, lawyer, involved with many good causes across the country, including minor league baseball, major league baseball. But Ira, so you went. Let's get into your college education, and then we'll get into your professional history. So you went. You got your BA in history at Randolph-Macon College in Ashland, Virginia, and then,
yes,
and then right after that, you went. Got into Yale Law School.
I did. Yeah, lucky.
How about that? And so what was your professional practice like? Where did you settle, and was it back in New York?
Well, I was back in Washington, D.C. after I got out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
I was a union lawyer and then a union single practitioner and ultimately ended up, and still am, a class action lawyer representing tens of thousands, if not in some cases hundreds of thousands of federal employees dealing with their pay.
Hmm.
And I still practice in Washington.
Which unions were you in active working for after college?
The Retail Clerks Union, once upon a time, that's and the Meat Cutters Union, the Teamsters, the NEA, the Boilermakers, the Carpenters, you name it.
All down in, all in D.C., right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that sure changed a lot. I guess back in the day, 35% of American workers were in a union. Now it's about down about 7% or so. Yeah,
extraordinary change.
Yeah.
And now the government unions are the most dominant unions.
Really? I guess even in this town, the MEA is a pretty strong one. SEIU pretty strong?
SEIU, I think, is really the strongest of the industrial unions.
Yeah.
And there are enormous changes in that whole field.
Yeah.
So how did your interest move into politics?
Well, I was born into politics because I grew up in the Lower East Side of New York, and at the age of 14 had my own soapbox out on the street corner along with other people in Lower East Side,
okay,
campaigning for Harry Truman, and that led to, I came from a communist family. We were all immigrants. Nobody spoke English.
Wow.
For what country of origin?
The Ukraine and Romania.
Okay.
My grandfather bought the passport of a Catholic named Lechner in order to get out of Romania because the Jews were facing pogroms.
Hmm.
And everybody spoke a polyglot language. Everybody was living together in that context. So social change was very important on an individual level.
Yeah. What the Ukraine then and now, apparently... we weren't happy with the election in 2004 in the Ukraine, right? And on the basis of exit polls, we decided to invalidate that election and have it running.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's a story behind the story in Ukraine was that most nuclear weapons of the Soviet Union were located in the Ukraine.
Ah.
And Bill Clinton then produced one of the greatest bargains of all time. He paid the Ukraine $500 million, I believe it was, for them to get rid of their nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And they transferred the nuclear weapons to the Soviet Union back to Russia to be reformulated and not to be used as a weapon. Now, just imagine if... during that mob action in Ukraine after the election was invalidated, in which there were two mobs going on at the same time, imagine if they had nuclear weapons.
Mm. Yeah.
And but for what Bill Clinton did, they would have had nuclear weapons.
Yeah. And then 2004, apparently Putin's candidate won at first. We're talking about fractions of votes, right? It wasn't like a landslide. Right. And then based on exit polls, I guess President Bush and our team decided, I don't know how we were able to pull that off, but we invalidated an election in the Ukraine. Am I correct on this?
That's probably true. I mean, look, the CIA was involved for many years in subverting different elections in different countries.
Sure.
But in the Ukraine, they were kind of stupid in the sense that a substantial Russian minority who lived over in the eastern part of Ukraine were not able to speak Russian officially. So in the schools, they'd have to speak Ukrainian. anything dealing with government, they'd have to speak Ukrainian, et cetera. And so it fostered this hostility among about 30% of their population, and that was the basis, ultimately, for Putin being able to pull off a grab of Crimea and then of other things. And I was recently in Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania to talk about nuclear weapons proliferation. And those countries are much smarter about it, and they allow their Russian minority, because they each share a border directly with Russia, to be able to speak their native language, to be able to speak their language and learn their language in school, et cetera, and thereby to be acclimated and accommodated within the society as a whole. And so, as a practical matter, I don't think there's any fear that the Russian minority in Lithuania or Estonia or Latvia is going to do the same kind of thing that they did in Ukraine.
Yeah. But you mentioned nuclear weapons. Obviously, they're dangerous in the hands of governments, but terrorists try to acquire these things as well, right?
Sure. And we have about 189 nuclear weapons that are called tactical nuclear weapons, B-61s, which are located in European countries relatively secretly, except everybody knows they're there. I mean, all the terrorists know, everybody knows exactly where they are, et cetera, and they're very lightly guarded, some in Belgium, which is, of course, a hotbed of terrorist activity, about 10 miles from the major capital. Italy, there are some. In Turkey, there's quite a few on American Air Force Base, but most of them are on foreign soil, and they're allegedly guarded by one company or two companies of American troops who are lightly armed. And we ought to be able to bring those weapons home because they have no practical purpose whatsoever.
Well, we have, what is it, 800-900 military bases and installations all over the world, some crazy number like that, right?
We're in virtually every country one way or another.
Yeah, I guess...
it's amazing.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing and a bad thing. I don't know. It's, you know, it's better us than somebody else, but do we want all that potential, those potential problems out there?
Well, when you're dealing with nuclear weapons, it only one mistake, one accident, one possibility, and then it could honestly be said that the future of the world is in serious jeopardy.
Are you familiar with Bill Lanawet at all? Or,
oh, sure. Bill's a good friend of mine.
Okay, because he's been on this show.
Been a guest of this show.
Yeah, and he's talked about...
He's Leo Szilard's specialist.
Wrote the book.
Par excellence.
Genius in the Shadows.
About 600 pages.
Didn't write the book literally, wrote the book actually.
Right. Yeah. Leo Szilard was really the originator of the stream of nuclear weapons, which... he discovered when he was waiting for a light to change on a street corner in London.
And he
saw the lights changing and said, oh, wait a minute.
And he conceived, he conceived the nuclear chain reaction. And then, and then of course, he became a pacifist and an anti-bomb after we won the war.
And wrote a spectacular book dealing with the fact that dolphins had greater intelligence than humans and that the real problem was that we couldn't communicate with the dolphins. And then once we communicated with the dolphins then could tell us how to get peace.
Huh. We'll have to check into that a little bit. So interesting. Well, Ira, you've got a very interesting, colorful history working with many, many national figures and whatever. We'll certainly want to get into that. But after your union work, you worked with several politics. You just kind of switched all into the political world itself, right?
I was always in the political world, even when I had a uniform on. much to the surprise of my colonel, but nonetheless, I went to work for Paul Simon in the United States Senate. Probably one of the most honest people in the history of the United
States.
Senator from Illinois, whose mentor was Senator Douglas of Illinois, who was a spectacular leader. And Paul then decided to run for president, which was a strange thing to do. And so I went along with him on that. With the bow tie. Always wore the bow tie every single day of his life.
Okay. He could tie one himself, I take it.
Yes, it wasn't a clip-on. Right.
We're going to come back with Ira Leshner, political activist, organizer of many great causes. Excuse me. Hang on. We'll be right back after this. All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. This is the time where Richard likes to thank our sponsors.
Big thank you to our sponsors at the top of the list. UBS with Michael Caronta. Could not do the show without UBS. Also, two great sets of CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs, more traditional firm in terms of financial statements and tax returns. And, of course, our great friend Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, a CFO service company led by Jason Kruger, CPA. Our great friend Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Now, all of this money these sponsors make for you, you can stash it at Mechanics Bank. Headed up the San Diego region by Vice President Sean Puckett, Mechanics Bank is a really neat niche market bank serving wealthy families and families in the real estate business. Also, Neil Staley with Hub International, great employee benefits firm. And, of course, Tony Lombardi and Alex Sonkin, our great buddies from the LG Experience and the Lombardi Group, where they help wealth advisors make heroes out of the CPA's very best clients. Paul Hines, Paul, of course, is the CEO of Hearthstone Private Wealth Management. Paul is also the catalyst behind, here in San Diego, SeniorSafeAndSound.org, an initiative helping to prevent the financial abuse of the elderly. And then, Michelle St. Clair, Elite Lifestyle Management. Elite Lifestyle Management is a really interesting concierge company. For those of you who have no time and want to get your most precious asset back, that would be your time. Elite Lifestyle Management can do all kinds of things for you, from the simple, like travel arrangements, to the more complex, like getting a fishing license to go fishing in Cuba. Anything that will help you save time, Elite Lifestyle Management can help you with that. And last but not least, Brenda Geiger. Brenda, of course, heads up Geiger Law Office, specializing in asset protection and estate planning. And for those of you who also like good food, how's that for a weird segue? We can help there too, right, Joe?
Absolutely. It's the Berry Good Food Foundation, headed up by Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac, putting on great foodie events all year long. They're on TV at UCTV, and they've been on this program. And, of course, the Berry Good Night Dinner coming up this fall in September. And then there's Lestat's Coffee Houses, open 24/7, 365, located in University Heights, Normal Heights, and, of course, a new one on University Avenue. Great people watching and very busy all the time. Great food, great coffee.
Great music, too.
Absolutely. And I know many of these sponsors have been working with you for many, many years, right, Richard, with great success.
That is correct. Many decades in some cases.
Anyway, if you get over to iymoney.com, there is a sponsor tab at the top of the page, and there's a drop-down menu. You can learn about any one or more or all of them right there. A lot of contact information.
And you can learn about something else, too, Joe. You can learn about how to become a sponsor of this great award-winning radio show.
Correct. There's a media kit that was put together by Courtney Holst.
PopX Graphics.
Yeah, who designs the website. And you can see a lot of the great guests we've had on this program. Also, the guests are podcasted there, archived there, including Ira will be on there as well. But, I mean, everyone from Irwin Jacobs, Malin Burnham, Dylene Marco Shiley.
And it's alphabetical.
It's alphabetical.
By last name, of course.
Bill Lirac, George Takei, Dick Van Dyke, et cetera, et cetera. So you're in good company, Ira Leshner.
Well, I'd be happy to be on the show. Thank you.
It's terrific. Now, you've got a great history working with me. We talked about Paul Simon a little bit, but you were on Capitol Hill quite a bit. Can you tell Eugene McCarthy, Hubert Humphrey.
Ed Muskie. I mean, I haven't seen that name in years.
Yeah.
Lots of winners there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's...
Ted Kennedy's a winner.
Yeah, Ted Kennedy. Governor Dukakis. I mean, he was two-term governor?
Yes.
Dukakis is the longest-term governor in the history of the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is, what's your goal when you're in politics? Is your goal self-aggrandizement? Is your goal to be able to make money out of politics? Or is your goal to try to make this democracy real for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the goal that I was taught as a youngster, and that's the goal I still believe in.
I still think, you know, call me old-fashioned or whatever, I think government, local, state, national, you should try to do the most good for the most people. Obviously, you know, you're going to have competing resources, and you can't, you know, help everyone at the same level, but... Does that make sense, Richard, or not?
Makes sense, but, you know, I know. My late father was a longtime school administrator back in the day where school boards actually cared about their community. Now school board positions are like where a lot of people try to start their political careers with no objective other than just moving up through the ranks. It's really bizarre to witness.
Yeah, but, you know, they say all politics is local. Tip O'Neill used to say that, right? Mm-hmm. Right, Ira? So, right. Hopefully we can. But how'd you get involved in the nuclear, you know, taking on the nuclear proliferation issue?
Because this goes back to the nuclear freeze days and the protests in the street and understanding where I grew up in grade school when we first started with nuclear weapons. I then figured out, well, if they dropped that nuclear weapon on 42nd Street and 5th Avenue in the center of New York, would it hit the Lower East Side? So I better crawl under my desk. That was the answer, right? And we practiced crawling under
the desk in school. I remember
that
in the mid-60s. I was born in 1958. In the mid-60s, right. This is in Northern California, we would have nuclear reaction drills.
Yeah.
Where the siren would go off and we would hide under our desk. And that was going to make a difference.
Yeah, you drop this bomb this day, so that's going to save me. I don't think so.
It's like De Anza Elementary will be spared,
but
the rest of the world won't be.
So we've just been lucky, let's face it. Right. At this point, John Kennedy had predicted that by this time, there would be 20 countries that would have nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. There are 9. And we have missed being in a nuclear incident,
a real live nuclear incident,
by seconds on a number of occasions.
Yeah.
There's most of the accidents that happened where bombs dropped out of planes and landed, et cetera, have not been disclosed. People don't realize
North Carolina,
so
I think,
we've
right?
just been lucky. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's one in there.
And of course, that movie Command and Control, they dropped a wrench down a silo. That nuke in Arkansas, wherever it was, it punctured the fuel tank, but I mean, it could have set off the missile.
So we're about to engage as a country in $1 trillion of modernization of our nuclear force.
God.
And the Russians are going to do something similar with less money, probably. The Chinese have 100 maybe or more, and we have thousands, and we have even more thousands in something called the Hedge in Minot, North Dakota.
Mm.
And why do we need so many nuclear weapons? And I'll say, talking once to a 3-star general, off the record, and I said, General, tell me, I won't breathe a word as to who you are or what. Tell me, how many do we really need? And he thought about, then whispered, he said,
a dozen?
Maybe 100.
100.
I said, really, that many?
That many?
He said, well, I said, I threw in 50 more just for redundancy, you know. do we need 5,000? 10,000, and you know, at the height of the Cold War under Curtis LeMay, we had 35,000 nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
We did, alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I heard Russia had 25.
Total lunacy.
Yeah, USSR lunacy. Had like 25.
Couldn't deliver them. Yeah. You know, what was the use
of it? Where do you keep that many?
Right.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Open in the hedge, whatever that is.
Right. Yeah. So you're immediate past chair of the board of the Council for a Livable World. Is that what the nuclear?
That's Leo Szilard started that organization, and it's was a very practical organization. I think today it's not quite that it was, but the fact of the matter is that there is a sensible way in which to control nuclear weapons. If a country would learn how to be sensible.
Yeah.
And instead, we seek to just satisfy the lowest common denominator politically and say, therefore, we have more, ours are better, all that sort of stuff, instead of being able to just efficiently say, okay, we need to deter any other country based on the principle of assured nuclear destruction.
Yeah. And, of course, how many times can you blow the world up? You know, once would be enough. But did you ever collaborate with Dr. Helen Caldicott or Joan Kroc when she was living?
Not really.
Because that was one of her causes, too. Yeah. And she wrote a book, Missile Envy.
And, you know, when you look at North Korea, we think the guy's crazy. Of course, he must think, and a lot of other people around the world think, our guy is crazy.
Well, he's already called Trump a psychopath.
But his is from a a self-preservation kind of concept. Mm-hmm. Look, if he did not have a nuclear weapon, would he be dead in a ditch like Saddam Hussein? Of course.
Mm-hmm. Or Libya.
Sure he would, right? Sure. Or Gaddafi, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. Of course he would. Yeah. So if he had a nuclear weapon, he said, gee, I don't think they're going to invade me.
Yeah.
Right?
I get it.
And so does he understand about nuclear destruction on an assured basis? Of course. Yeah. He knows that if he ever launched one against us, North Korea would disappear.
Suicide. Sure. As most of the world. But anyway, welcome back with Ira Leshner, who's an activist in many great causes and a lawyer, right after these words. Hang on. All right, riding the range here. By the way, that is Tommy Tedesco's dad. That's Denny Tedesco's dad, Tommy Tedesco, playing the guitar on that, who's been on this show, Ira. Anyway, we're back with Ira Leshner, who's very active in many
By the way, that
causes.
Was The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew is the
film.
Didn't
get Joe's reference.
Right.
Great documentary.
Well, all you need to know is Tommy Tedesco. He's the guitarist. They don't need to know about all of it. But anyway, Ira has been with the Council for a Livable World, but also his more current project is Project High Hopes, Ira. So tell us about the launch of that and your role.
Right. Project High Hopes is a charitable foundation, and it spawned another foundation, both of which my wife and I manage. And that other foundation is called Inspire US. Mm-hmm. And our goal with Inspire is to register in a nonpartisan way in high school as many high school students as we possibly can. We've been at it now for 2 years in 7 states in the country.
You mean register to vote?
Yeah. Register to vote.
Okay.
In school as a matter of civic engagement, nonpartisan, in which the kids themselves are trained. They put up their own videos about being a citizen, about what it means. And in the training, I tell the kids in each of these states, I say, I will make one promise to you. I will not ever tell you that you're going to be a future leader of America because your time is now.
Hmm.
And they brighten up and see, oh, my. We're going to be able to vote, and our voices will be heard. This generation, Generation Z, it is not the millennial generation, which is actually pretty selfish. Yeah. But the Generation Z is the most progressive generation in the history of America.
More civic-minded.
They have lived with a black president most of their thinking life. Mm-hmm. They've lived with marriage equality. Mm-hmm. They've lived with income inequality as they seek for jobs, et cetera. They're worried about college affordability. Mm-hmm. And they understand and meet with each other in groups that are biracial, that are of every ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
They have really understood what it is to be an American.
Mm.
And now they need to put that into action by having their voice heard. And so we're in Arizona, Colorado, and Nevada. By the way, I learned how to say Nevada and not Nevada, which they will tell you about right away if you say it wrong.
Nevada.
Kentucky,
okay.
West Virginia, and we're going back into North Carolina now that they've cleaned up their voter suppression laws. And we're hoping to expand to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Orlando, Florida, and Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And so we're now in 250 high schools. We have paid staff on the ground. This is the foundation my wife and I founded and manage. And our website is Project High Hopes or inspireus.com.
ProjectHighHopes.org?
.org.
Okay.
.org.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I always forget that.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any comment on what Greg Palast talks about, the cross-check program and the Red Map program?
I know about Greg Palast, and undoubtedly there is voter suppression all through the South and parts of the Midwest. We really don't know the full extent of it. Mm-hmm. And he is really on top of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I've done is rather than work on that side of the equation, I brought a case in the United States Supreme Court many years ago while I was working for the federal government, though this was not part of my work, but and that is to get rid of the poll tax in America. And that case went to the Supreme Court. where the Supreme Court 9-0 ruled the poll tax was unconstitutional. And so I've been in the voter registration business, if you will, as a volunteer and
How many states had the poll tax? It wasn't all of them, but it was a lot.
All the South had a poll tax.
All the South did,
In Virginia, it was $2, and $2 was a lot of money.
They were charging you to vote, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Unbelievable.
And the white landowner very often used the poll tax for a purpose, and that is he actually paid the poll tax, but he gave each voter a signed ballot to put in for his candidate.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was used both ways, but
it
was a terrible thing.
Yeah. Now, tell us about the Project High Hopes with in the medical biotech intervention, because that looks interesting.
Right. Well, there's an outstanding physician in Boston at Mass General and Harvard named Thomas Burke. Thomas Burke is all over the world as we speak, trying to combat a terrible a condition called postpartum hemorrhage. Almost 1 million women a year all over the world either die or become disabled because during the birth they have a tired uterus, either too many births or just a condition generically, and they start to bleed. And they bleed to death.
But especially prevalent in countries with, shall we say, low GDP, not a lot.
Well, it happens in the United States also.
Right,
if
but
you're
not
extent, in a hospital.
Right.
If you're in a hospital, you're rushed immediately into surgery. They probably do a cesarean. They stop the bleeding. But just think, you know, you're bleeding terribly in your uterus. You can't just sort of press something and stop it.
Yeah.
So Thomas Burke, he was in Kenya, and he was in the bush. He was witnessing this, and he said to somebody, anybody have a condom? Somebody gave him a condom. He attached that to a tube, attached the tube to a source of water, stuck the one end of the condom to the woman, and blew up a water balloon inside her uterus. That stopped the bleeding by pressure. Then after a period of time, the woman with the water balloon still there was taken by individuals actually running her on a makeshift stretcher to the nearest hospital, which might be 50 miles away.
Yeah.
And so now that process has been sophisticated, postpartum hemorrhage therapy, and it's now been adopted all over Latin America.
My sister-in-law, I think, had that one of her births, and it was very critical for a while there. She lost a lot of blood.
It's an extraordinary thing, and it happens quickly.
Yeah.
And the obstetrician has to be very, very careful. This therapy is now being exported. Just a few weeks ago, in our first experiment with it in India, in 1 week, in one particular town, they saved 22 lives.
How about that? And of course, and you're also involved in controlling cholera and dengue.
Right. And cholera, dengue, lots of other diseases that can be cured by hydration. Unfortunately, babies or very old people who get cholera or dengue or any one of those tropical diseases are not able to drink because they're so dehydrated, they're almost lifeless.
Yeah.
And so with a local company has a process here called from Halozyme called Hylenex, which if inserted in front of a water source that's attached through the vein system, will then take whatever drug is being used and breaks through all the matrix in our cells and therefore carries it all through the body.
Yeah.
So we've been saving lives all over Africa with that process.
Yeah.
But hey, Ira, back to Inspire US.
Mm-hmm.
What's of greatest interest to high school students now? Is it sustainability, climate change? I mean, what is it?
Climate change is very, very important. College affordability is obviously number one.
Okay.
And outside of college affordability, they are very into marriage equality, and climate change very, very high. and income affordability.
Inequality.
This is a generation that is very progressive. It has not been voting because it generally does not know about how you register to vote, you know. And so we do it right in class with the permission of the school. We do not mention party under any circumstances. Excellent. It's completely nonpartisan, and this is a charitable venture.
Real quick, we only have a couple seconds left. Sure. Do you see any national, state, or local politicians coming on the horizon that may be to your liking that will do well?
Yeah, I think Governor Terry McAuliffe of Virginia, Mark Cuban,
really?
The Mavericks.
And then how about Gavin Newsom? You like him, Gavin?
Gavin Newsom, absolutely.
All right.
And then think about Elizabeth Warren, perhaps as vice president for one of those people.
Wonderful.
In 2020.
Anyway, Ira Lesher, thank you so much for all the great work you've done, have done, and continue to do. And great having you on the program. Richard Musio, great seeing you. Justin Harder, board operating. Thanks.
Everybody, have a great fourth.
Yeah, thanks for making it sound terrific. Thanks to Craig Blanke and Dave Sniff here at KFNB. All these podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. We'll see you next time.